Welcome to the Grappling Grappling Rewind Podcast.
Welcome to this week on the Grappling Rewind Podcast. In this week's show, we are going to recap through Abu Dhabi. We're going to recap through Abu Dhabi Worlds, the UAE JJF. We're going to recap Fight to Win 111 in Cleveland, Ohio. We're going to recap the ADCC second European trials. What'd I say?
111.
We're going to preview Fight to Win 111 in Chicago, Illinois, and we're going to talk a little bit about Jordan Burroughs versus Ben Askren. As always on the show, I'm your host, Maine, joined with my co-host,
Emil.
And then Rob Sullivan will pop in to talk about Ben Askren versus Jordan Burroughs a little later. How you been, Emil?
I've been fan-fucking-tastic. I can't wait to talk about Worlds, the World Pro, UAE-JJF.
You love UAE-JJF more than any other guy that I know locally.
Yeah, and you know what's hilarious is like, so I just by pure coincidence, I'm always out for like Quintet and Kasai, but I'm always around for the world, like the UAE-JJF.
You're always
like,
in for King of
Grand
Mats.
Grand Slams, yeah.
It's funny, like, it's funny, like you miss a bunch of other like major super fight cards, but you're always in for UAE-JJF.
Yeah, like, King I'm of Mats totally or, like, okay Worlds. With that. I am so fucking okay with that.
Did you love that 6 minute? You've completely, by the way, turned me. I now love that 6 minute time frame.
Like, yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah, it's really fucking good. So let's get into a little bit of news before we get into all of that. In big news, Keenan is still a free agent.
Yeah. I like how he keeps dropping in certain gyms. Like, you're wondering where he's going to land. Like, is he going to join Henzo's?
Interesting. He's a guy that he's moved throughout his entire career. Like, he started in Hawaii. Then he went down, like, D.C., Virginia area, Lloyd's, like, our area. And then he went out to Atos. And, like, so he's a guy that has moved throughout his jiu-jitsu career pretty extensively. So it really would not surprise me to have him, like, stay in San Diego, stay in that area, go to, like, Checkmate, or, like, go back to, like, the East Coast, or, like, it really wouldn't surprise me for him to continue to move really any other place.
Yeah. Yeah. So, we'll be curious to see where he ends up, or if he starts his own gym.
Yep. So, let's see. I'm looking for more news. Oh, yeah. Craig Jones has a new DVD out. More leg lock stuff from the Australian gentleman. Looked really cool.
All right. Sweet. I look forward to more Craig Jones fucking content.
Yep. Lachlan Giles did like a really cool AMA on Reddit where he answered a bunch of stuff. He talked about like...
Oh, yeah. I saw that. I didn't realize he was like a PhD in like physiotherapy.
Yeah, he's
right?
A physical therapist.
No shit.
He actually is like a physical therapist. And in the beginning of his AMA, he was like, do not ask for medical advice. I am legally not allowed to provide medical advice unless I see you. So I can't answer any like medical advicey questions as part of this AMA, just so you know that. And so I thought it was really interesting. He gave some really other interesting answers. He was doing an AMA for the entire day, so I think that's probably finished by the time that this episode comes out, but there's a lot of really interesting information. He's a really interesting guy. He's very well-spoken, and so I highly recommend go find his AMA and, like, take a look at
it. I'm glad that he said that caveat in the beginning because, like, you know, this happens all the time on Reddit and, you know, internet forums for jiu-jitsu. It's like invariably someone asks, like, medical questions that it's like, dude, you can't fucking ask. Like, no one can reasonably respond to that. I remember like last year there was someone asking about like I want to say like fucking like repeated aneurysms or some shit, and he's like, hey, should I train jiu-jitsu? I get repeated aneurysms. And people are like, go see a fucking doctor,
dude. It's
like,
listed in the sidebar for RBJJ of like, do not ask medical advice in this form.
Yeah,
like, we're not, you can't give it. And so it was funny. In other news, now we can announce that Seth Daniels and Fight to Win, the whole Fight to Win crew, is doing the production for ADCC 2019.
Fuck yes. Fuck yes. And I love, like, Seth and Fight to Win's, like,
we knew
promotions
this,
about
this.
I couldn't
say shit. I was like, I was so excited about this.
Because, like, he said it fucking best. And he's like, look, this is the Olympics for jiu-jitsu and grappling. Like, it can't be run like a fucking nice little local fucking tournament. It has to have production. It deserves production. It's fucking amazing. Like, yeah. And I have full confidence in Seth and his team to pull it off.
And I got my tickets and I got my flights and I got I got the floor seats for 2 days. They were $120 a piece for Rachel and I. Like, worth your money. If you're in the US, it's in the US. I got my flights for $209 for me and I think like $270 for Rachel. I got $250 for tickets for both of us. I gotta get a hotel still. Like, that would be expensive. But dude, $1,000, you get to go to watch like a world event happening in the US.
Yeah.
Like $1,000 for two people. Like, I don't know who else from the team is going right now. But dude, I'm so excited. Like, I bought extra mics so that we can do more ADCC stuff when we get there. Like, I cannot. And now Fight to Win. Now Seth is producing it.
Yeah.
So you know it's going to be fucking bonkers.
It's going to be so fucking nuts.
I think tickets are going to go up too. So if you haven't got your tickets now, I highly recommend buying your tickets, because now that Fight to Win's producing it, you know it's going to be a fucking show.
Yeah.
So you're going
to
go.
It's going to be a show. It's going to be fucking promoted well.
You're going to be
it's
going to
be...
like a real like professionally produced event now, as opposed to like watching a cool tournament. So I would guess that ticket prices are going to move. And because Mo's talked about ticket prices going up after the new reissuing of the tickets. So if you haven't got your tickets now and you're thinking about going, jump in at that price now, because it is I cannot get across well enough how awesome this event will be to
yeah,
go to.
To put that into context, right now it's what, like $60 a night per person for floor seats. That's $60 is like, isn't that like around the same price as a Fight to Win, like
something like that?
So basically for the price of a
per day. Basically, yeah. So it's a 2-day event, so it's $120.
Right. So for the price of a Fight to Win event, you get to go and see fucking the best in the world go at it.
Yeah.
In the most prestigious tournament that there is.
Yeah.
So
that's
go and
a
get your
steal.
Fucking tickets.
That is a steal of a price. Like, literally, those tickets could have been like $200, and I still would have been like, ah, it's expensive. I'm still going to buy them.
Yeah.
Like, because it's going to be such an amazing event. Hell so yeah. I'm way excited about that. So moving on, that's all I got for news. I mean, you got any other news?
No.
Let's see, make sure I have no other news. All right, that's all I got for news. Let's move on to the recaps. So moving on to our recap of the 2019 Abu Dhabi World Professional Jiu-Jitsu Championships that took place in Abu Dhabi on April 26, 2019.
Yeah, I fucking love Abu Dhabi. Like, I love UAEJJF.
They pay their athletes.
They pay their athletes. They put on the best event. I love you guys. Please work on your branding. Like, just, that is such a fucking mouthful to say. Abu Dhabi World Professional Jiu-Jitsu Championship. I kept, like, the acronym kept popping up in my feed, and the acronym is ADWPJJC, and I was like, what the fuck is, what is that? Oh, right, it's, you know, one of my favorite fucking events, and I had no idea, like.
I like how you start the segment off with this.
I'm just saying, they do it, like, 99% perfect. Just come up with something.
God,
where,
dude, I want to
like,
talk.
For example, like, they have a special name for their, like, instant replay. They call it the Falcon Eye.
That was a dope name, by the way.
That's
oh,
a dope
we
name.
Gotta go to the Falcon Eye.
Like, I don't
oh,
know.
Shit.
Like, fucking call it, like, yeah, whatever. Like, Falcon Championships. Or come up with something just a little bit more elegant.
Well, it is run by Abu Dhabi. Yeah, like, so they want to put the Abu, because it actually is run by the Abu Dhabi government. Abu Dhabi government?
Yeah,
Abu Dhabi
it's
government.
A nationally televised event, and actually the commentators were talking about this. It's been nationally televised since 2009. And actually, I think that it's nationally, I can't think of, you know, maybe in Brazil they televise some events, but like this,
maybe,
but like, as far as I know, this is one of the, well, if not, probably the largest, like, just straight up televised event in jiu-jitsu. That's fucking amazing.
I would agree. I mean, and also the production quality kind of merits that as well. Like, they have multiple cameras. We talk about this every time we cover UAEJJF. I kind of want to harp on this because it's such a, yeah, such a standout amongst the other events that we cover. Like, we cover some great events, don't get me wrong. Like, I love covering other events, but Abu Dhabi, it looks like you're watching, like, a truly, like, produced,
professional sport.
They have multiple cameras. There's a walkout cam.
Dude, there's
walkout, overhead cams.
Like, this time around, I can't remember if this has always been the case, but they had the fucking tunnel with, like, the fog
coming
out.
They had the tunnel last couple King of Mats.
Yeah.
They have that. Like, it looks really good, and it's fun to watch, and it really, it shows the stakes that are occurring, especially at the finals matches. They have that overhead camera. They do the instant replay. They do the callback. Like,
awesome reffing, you know,
yeah.
Great commentary. Commentary
was on point this weekend.
Always is. Like, just in general, the production value is through the fucking roof. So
yeah, we highly recommend. Go back and watch it. Where do you want to start with this one? Let's start with the males.
Yeah, let's start with that. I'll talk about two events before we get into the finals here. The first match I want to talk about is fucking Kanan Duarte is goddamn unstoppable, and he big dogs Herbert Santos in a 2-0 win.
Dude, he's fucking,
it's just fucking insane.
He's so young and athletic and strong and quick, and his proprioception is good. We saw that match and him in his finals match versus Wardzinski.
Yeah, we'll talk about that one, but I just want to, you know, like, Herbert Santos is a fucking beast, and Kanan just, like, single legs him into the next fucking dimension.
Yeah,
like, look,
he's a beast athletically. Herbert gets a lot of shit deservedly so for a lot of it.
Yeah.
But you can't deny, like, that's a dude that I've seen repeatedly. Like, Herbert does something I think one of the most impressive things I've ever seen in jiu-jitsu is guys will jump guard on him. Not pull guard, but jump guard on him. Herbert will realize, like, a little late that they've jumped guard, before the opponent has locked his legs together, he will realize it, put the hands on the hips, sprawl out, and pass off of the guard jump in midair. Like, just the level of athleticism to make that split-second decision and get the hips out and actually get around the guard before the opponent lands, like, athletic freak.
So and, to try to get points against him on the feet is just like... like, it's insanity, and Kanan's able to do it seemingly effortlessly.
It was just the way that Duarte did it in this match that was so impressive to me and you. He just, he grabs the leg, and he just kind of, like, lifts him, and you're like, whoa, this is a different... Duarte, for all the stuff he's won, you can see that he's a different kind of dude. He's had black belt, what, 8, 9 months?
Maybe 9 months, yeah.
Something like that. He's just a different kind of dude, and he's that next generation of, like, something special guy.
Yep.
Obviously.
So, and so we're going to be saying his name a lot in the next, you know,
forever.
Years, basically.
Jeez, I realize, like, we're going to cover this guy forever now at this point. I think he's the guy that kind of most reminds me of, like, Galvao.
He does.
He's under Galvao. Like, what Galvao is going to do in that style of, like, just bullshit athleticism, but also, like, crisp, clean technique.
Yep.
And also that proprioception. Galvao having when he's young, he could just move a little differently. Like, Duarte has a lot of that. So it was exciting to watch in that match particularly.
Yep, love watching him. So then there's another huge, well, this is a colossal upset. Oliver Lowell submits Levi Jones-Leary by knee bar. So
in like the quarters or something.
Super early on.
It wasn't on the final day because it was still that camera that was kind of far out at that point.
So Levi is basically like, you know, playing open guard, and he gets a sweep, and he comes up, and Levi cuts through Oliver's guard and goes to knee on belly. And this is where Oliver does something really slick. He just inverts while Levi is knee on belly and shucks him off a little bit, but grabs the leg that was like on posting the knee on his abdomen and yanks it out for a really quick knee bar.
Yeah, it was the setup here was really nifty. Like, you don't see this hit a ton at the high level. You see it, you've seen, it's the knee on belly knee bar off the inversion. You see it hit, but you don't see a hit like this at a high level very often. Just times
it's
the transition.
Timing.
Well. Yeah,
it's,
timing's beautiful.
You have to be able to, if you, you know, if you're even a split second off and they can settle their weight, then you're fucked. And you can try to invert all you want, and it's not going to go anywhere. But this was just timed perfectly where there was just enough momentum with Levi that when he inverts, he's able to push Levi off so that Levi has to hit the mat and then gets his knee completely.
Yeah, this event, there were a couple really impressive finishes like this that were just like, man, the timing on that was beautiful. I think the Duarte knee bar, and we saw another cool knee bar in ADCC in the trials that we're going to talk about a little later. Did I say we're going to talk trials?
Yeah.
Okay, right, I did say that. So, yeah, there's some really cool knee bars this weekend. I'm a knee bar aficionado, so I was a big fan of that.
Absolutely. But let's get into the finals results.
Now, let's get into the finals results. Want to start with the lower guys or the heavier guys?
Start low. Right, 56 kilograms. We have Hiago George defeating Carlos Alberto Del Silva by ad.
Been a couple weeks, Emil?
So fucking hard. Yeah, I need to warm up here. So this was the whole finals, like all of the finals, we see a lot of 50-50. This is more or less exactly that. There was a little bit of donkey guard at one point.
But even the slow matches, again, I want to stress this, like they were, I mean, all the final matches were good.
Yes.
But even the slow matches for UAEJF through all the rounds, they're 6 minutes.
They're 6 minutes, and this one is down to the T. Like, Hiago gets an ad standing with a reset. Basically, his time runs out. So, like, you know, it's all of these matches come down to the seconds, and so
This is the world for UAEJJF. The stakes, like, everyone that makes it here is really, really good, and that's it. It looks like the world for the IBJJF, but I feel like the pacing of all these matches is different. You get the same level of talent, or a similar level of talent, but it's just the pacing's different, and it's refreshing to watch. Like, they're pretty aggressive with stalling penalties, and penalties in general, honestly.
So that comes into play the next match, actually, and I think you're exactly right, where it basically governs exactly how everything is super exciting in this. But in 62 kilograms, we have Joao Gabriel Souza defeating Joao Miao by advantages, and in this match, the refs were fucking amazing. They start, they give them a minute 50 into the fucking match, they start handing out stalling penalties to both of these guys. That's fucking crazy. Like,
that's quick, too.
Super quick, but like, hey, they're not working, so, you know, stand them back up, give them each penalties. There's a double guard pull. There's a 20-second rule violation. Boom, double penalties again.
Yeah.
And then at this point, the commentators are talking about, like, yeah, how how the rule sets were governed or were designed to make this a very watchable thing because it's nationally televised since 2009.
Well, it is a watchable. I mean, it's a broadcast event, and like,
I would
and
watch this with friends. Like, I have no problem showing this stuff.
Well,
they like,
figured it out. I think they figured out more like, hey, you've got to have more aggressive stalling penalties, and you've got to push. You've got to have a rule set that facilitates good jiu-jitsu as well as. I think they're still focusing good jiu-jitsu, but it is far more watchable than a 10 or 15 minute match usually.
And what's crazy is, like, despite the aggression by the refs, there's another fucking double guard pull 20-second violation. So now at this point, they're each at three penalties.
So basically what happens to me, I was talking about, if you're not familiar with the rule set there, if both competitors pull guard and then no action or no submission happens or no pass happens or sweep happens within that 20-second timeline, both competitors receive a penalty.
Right. So more or less, if there's a double guard pull, someone's got to come up to their knees to basically take the top position there. And
if nobody does, both guys get a penalty for that.
Exactly. So at this point, like, I obviously, when you're both at three penalties, because they will fucking double DQ your asses.
In the finals.
They fucking know. Like, everyone knows. In fact, the Meows were fucking one of the, I can't remember who it was fucking double DQ'd with Keenan back when they were brown belts at one of these events. So they don't fuck around at all. And everyone knows that. So Carlos goes crazy, and you see, he actually attempts a shitty straight ankle lock without any leg positioning on fucking Meow. Like, what? What are you like?
He
why
attempts,
would you even
just your breakdown? Like, we try to be pretty technical in the show. He attempts a shitty straight ankle lock on Meow.
Yeah, there's no like, it's pointless. It's
like you got to grab for it to stop the clock.
Yeah, you need to physically remove his foot to make for that to be. And
no,
even
no.
then, he's
you need
probably
to you need to have the ref stop it. Like, you need to injure him so bad that the ref stops it, because the Meows, like, we've seen, dude, there's a GIF compilation online that just is both Meow brothers getting their feet destroyed by Cummings, by Tonin, by like two or three other people, and it's just their feet bending like sideways, and you're like, okay, there's no way his ligaments aren't broken in this footage I'm watching, and he just eats it.
So, like, we actually see Joao doing lapel guard here, which is like really funny to see, like, how widespread it's gotten.
They're playing a little more lapel guard now. Now they're playing like a little more out on their guard there. You see them start to play with lapels a little more recently now than they have before.
Yeah, everyone seems to be doing it. So Keenan is definitely shifting jiu-jitsu, which is pretty nuts. Joao Gabriel Souza is able to maintain advantages over Meow. Even with Meow furiously trying to get some kind of advantages at the end there. So the end is absolutely crazy. But on to
Joao takes the 62-kilogram division for the black belt men.
69 kilograms. Paulo Meow defeats Isaac Dodolin by advantages. This is a fucking awesome match, and I think they said this is something like the fifth time these two guys have seen each other this year. So like
something like that. They've met each other at King of Mats and other UAGGF events, and I think like one or two are they're we
maybe
always
Spider
see these dudes
like
in
remember.
Something together.
Yeah, and so this is a great, this is an emergent rivalry that's really fucking awesome, and Isaac always keeps it close. In this case, you know, Isaac is up, he gets a sweep, and there's a point where Paulo's just fucking going insane and comes up and knocks Isaac back, I think, out of bounds, and the ref calls it a fleeing the mat. So
when I watched this, I thought, like, the way Dodolin turns, he kind of like takes two steps towards the edge of the mat, and Paulo's definitely pushing into him at that point, and it was like one of those calls where it's like I can see him getting called for fleeing the mat. I can also see like he was just moving out of the position. It's like one of those. You have a huge problem with the call. It's definitely on like the lighter side of making that call. Like it was not egregious fleeing of the mat. Like it wasn't DQ fleeing the mat, but it was like I can see the argument that was made for why he was deemed to be fleeing the mat in this position. Even though Paulo was pushing against him, Dodolin takes like two steps towards the edge of the mat where Paulo is just kind of like on his side pushing him. So it's like it is, like you said to me, a little bit of a dubious call, but I do understand why he did get the call. It's just definitely on that, like, that fine line of, like, was it really fleeing the mat, or was it just defending the takedown?
Do you have to throw the penalty on there, you know? Like,
yeah.
So.
But basically, that's what he loses by.
Yeah.
Like, they're 2-2.
The penalty's the deciding factor. Yeah.
Yeah, they're 2-2 with one at a piece, and then Dodolin has that one penalty for fleeing the mat, and Paul is able to take the win.
Yep.
And again, this is a really cool rivalry. I like how both these guys match up. I like that Dodolin seems to have, like, good answers for what Paulo's doing and keeps Paulo, like, super active in all these positions and, like, actively defending the passing sequences of Dodolin the entire time. We see Paulo routinely shifting grips, almost getting Barambola, almost getting underneath. Like, this is just a really, really good match, and I'm a huge fan of this rivalry.
Yep, me too.
We see these guys in the top at the same events all the time, and it's nice. Like, I like that both these guys...
pushing each other.
Yes.
I feel like they're both, you know, this is the whole
it's always a close match. Yeah. Like, it's never like a blowout match. So it's really cool. Like, I'm really happy to see, I'm really excited to see in the future how these guys continue to match up, because you're watching two guys make each other better, and that's exciting.
Hell yeah.
So that's all I got for that division.
Yep.
Paulo takes that one onto the 77 kilogram division.
Yep. Tommy Langecker submits Oliver Lovell by a choke. So Oliver's crazy upset of Levi Jones-Leary unfortunately just gets completely stonewalled here by Tommy Langecker, and it's not even close. Like, Tommy pulls guard, he gets a beautiful omoplata sweep, he's able to take the back from like a crab ride baby bolo position, and then he just gets the choke, and that's the end of it.
Dude, let's talk about Langecker.
Yeah,
like, how fucking good. What's it? I wonder what his ceiling is. Like, he's a dude that was kind of like, always kind of in the fringes, like, maybe he's gonna do it, maybe he's not. And this year, I think when he subbed Erberth, everyone kind of went like, it was a weird match, don't get me wrong, but it was like, who is this? I think it was maybe in Euros last year.
Yeah.
I don't know. It was the sub of Erberth was the first time everyone kind of went, ooh, look at this guy. And, like, everyone knew he was really good and an elite-level black belt. But to have him, he's just been on a tear this year.
Yeah.
And I think someone said in a comment I was reading, basically, like, yeah, Langecker can pull a lot of rabbits out of his hat. He can just perform when the chips are down.
Yep.
And that's obviously, like, you see him doing this back. Like, he just gets past. He gets the choke. And getting a finish at a major like this is pretty damn impressive. And the way he was able to do it was even more impressive. I'm super excited to see what else we see out of Langecker. I assume we're going to see him at Worlds. I assume he's a contender for Worlds now. Like, it wouldn't surprise me to see him, like, in the top bracketing for Worlds.
Yeah, we'll see how it goes. At 85 kilograms, we have Hudson Mateus defeating Faisal Al-Khatbi by decision.
That's the Sheik's son, I believe.
Oh, interesting. Okay, that explains a lot of what happened towards the end here. So this is another triple penalty each match with 90 seconds. Like, basically, it goes all the way down to 90 seconds. They rack up three penalties each.
Oh, yeah, and on your fourth penalty, you both get DQ'd. If you get four penalties in a UAJJF match and IBJJF match, you get DQ'd. So that's why we keep talking about, like, oh, once they get three penalties, like, oh, I get shaky. Because if you fuck up one more time, you get DQ'd, and they will DQ you aggressively.
So, yeah, basically, the first double penalty was for disengaging on the feet, and then they had two more because basically the entire rest of the match was Hudson Mateus in closed guard. And the last 40 seconds are pretty fucking exciting. There's Hudson gets like a near scissor sweep from like De La Hiva, and the crowd is going fucking, like, it is so energetic and so loud. And they initially give Hudson the ad for that scissor sweep attempt, and they end the match, and then the ref says, hold up, we got to go to the Falcon Eye. They go back, and everyone's like, the commentators are like, I wonder what they're like reviewing here, because like, there's actually during that exchange also an attempted armbar by Hudson Mateus that could have been another ad. And the ref comes back and they take away Hudson's ad, so now it's evened up. And I was like, holy shit, the Brazilian's about to get Brazilian, or more like Arabed, which would be fucking hilarious.
Yeah, hold up, can you say that?
Yeah.
Okay, making sure.
I can say it. I don't give a shit.
All right. Thanks, Emil. Brazilian about to get Brazilian.
Yeah. Well, it went down with Hudson getting the decision either way, which is totally fair. Well,
he had the armbar attempt in there.
He had the armbar attempt. That, he had the near sweep.
Yeah.
I think
Where it's like Facile looked good, but Hudson, I think, was putting up more offense. He was doing more in the match. Again, I'm so used to Fight to Win rules.
Yeah.
Like, Fight to Win rules have spoiled me for watching a match because I'm like, yeah, that guy obviously won because he was doing more and he was throwing up sub attempts. And I'm like, and UAEJJF and IBJJF are like, no, these are the criteria we want. I'm like, that criteria is not action, though.
I think it was pretty fucking clear. I'm glad.
Yeah,
that the
it was a good decision. Again, I do like that they use the replay. And I use it for like, hey, because these matches are so important. Like, there's money on the line. There's a stake on the line. Like, UAEJJF is only getting more and more prestigious, only getting larger. And I think, like, I like that they have, like, a review process. So there's, like, there's guys don't usually argue about UAEJJF wins.
Yeah.
At the end, because, like, there's a process.
If,
and, like,
if
Faisal
had been given the decision, I would have been, you know, conspiracy hat Emil would be fucking out right now. Like, tinfoil hat Emil would be fucking spouting some shit. But Hudson gets the win by decision. At 94 kilograms, Kanan Duarte submits Adam Wardzinski by knee bar.
This leads into our earlier conversation about how fucking good Kanan is.
He's on a different level, man. Like, so Kanan pulls guard and Adam gets the ad for that. And, dude, Kanan's, like, nearly hits a fucking kiss of the dragon, which is crazy at 94 kilograms. Like, holy fucking shit.
For some reason, I always forget how big Wardzinski is. Like, I always have him as, like, an 85 kilogrammer or a 77 kilogrammer. He's 94. Like, I always want to make him one or two weight classes below. I have no idea why.
So,
the funny thing is, we could see these guys match up at ADCC, potentially.
Probably. I mean, this is already, I think, the third match that I can recall in the past couple months between these two. Kanan has taken every single one.
Yeah, I believe, he's taken all of them.
It's just fucking savagery. So what ends up happening here is during the Kiss of the Dragon, Adam kind of scoots his hips back to avoid getting his back taken, and they're in this, like, kind of 50-50 double open guard type thing. And
this is a finishing sequence to go back and rewatch because
it's so good.
It's super interesting, and also it's super, like, just clean.
Yeah, it's clean, and this goes back to what Maine was talking about Kanan's just, like, kind of uncanny pro perception here, where he's just, like, he can see where the movement is going, and he can get ready for it before it happens. He anticipates movements, and so
he understands his body in 3D space really well, and you can tell how tight he grabs this knee bar, like,
so
how well he understands it.
They're both in this, like, 50-50, and Kanan is starting to go for the knee bar. He starts to grab the far leg in a way where you're like, it looks like he's going to grab it for knee bar, and then he kind of, like, fakes a toe hold, and he's watching Adam. Like, his attention is not on the foot that he's attacking. He's watching Adam to watch when he rolls. And sure enough, Adam rolls and goes to sort of like a running man escape to try to get his leg out. And Kanan just fucking cranks, just rips.
And Kanan spins his hips over as well. And then halfway through the spin on his hips, locks the leg into place and finishes the knee bar. But that was, again, the really cool in itself. But what was really interesting to me was, like, the closing of the 3D space. But also, if you look at Kanan's far side leg, he actually hooks Wardzinski in and stops the roll as well with his knee and his leg.
Yeah.
So, like, it was just an amazing, like, combination of him anticipating the roll, setting himself up to be able to beat the roll, get his hips in place to where he needed to be on the roll, and as an added bonus, as added, like, protection, also being able to stop Wardzinski's roll with his opposite foot.
Yeah.
Just amazing finishing sequence.
Outstanding.
And it was so cool to watch because you looked like, God, it's so tight. It was just such a clean, beautiful technique, and it's rare that in the finals you see that it looks this nice.
Yeah. He's unstoppable. Can't wait to see what his ceiling is, so. At 110 kilograms, Joao Gabriel Rocha submits Yahya Al-Hamadi by bow and arrow. I don't know what was up with the production on this match. It was like shaky camera, no commentary.
It might have been they uploaded the mat side footage,
exactly.
is what I guess. Because usually for the finals matches, for all these, they have
the commentary.
Beautiful production, but they also do have the mat side footage presence, and sometimes, like, we can't find, like, the commentary, the good one, and we only find the mat side footage. So usually after a couple of days they've cleared that up, but the one we're looking at now is still the mat side footage.
So this is Joao Gabriel getting a butterfly sweep with a belt grip, and Yahya turtles. Joao immediately takes the back, and gets a bow and arrow after a few minutes of being on the back there. Yeah, so
do not let Chuck Gabriel get your fucking back.
Yep.
Because, dude, he's on a tear, too. Like, he just got that thing over Bouchesha at BGJ Stars. Like, he is another dude to start watching. Like, he had the match with Gordon that was super close where Gordon destroyed his own knee going for the sub. So, like, he's another dude that to keep watching. Like, again, you've been watching Chuck Gabriel forever at this point. But, again, he's up at that, like, upper echelon of guys where he's always in the discussion now.
Absolutely.
So,
onto the women.
Onto the ladies.
49 kilograms, Maisa Bastos defeats Tamaris Aquino by advantage. So this is, I fucking love, like, go back and watch this match. It is a clinic on this kind of like modified leg weave pass that I fucking love. I originally learned this from Jared Wiener and then again from Jonathan Alves, but basically it's kind of like a leg weave position, but you can get it from getting your hips on the mat underneath the person when they're in open guard. And you can then also come up into a more traditional leg weave position. But Maisa goes back and forth here and then gets an ad for a near pass and dominates. But it's awesome technique. It's really, really excellent. At 55 kilograms, Bianca Basilio defeats Amal Amjahid by points. So this starts off pure fire. I mean, Bianca hits like a rolling inverted sweep while Amal gets off balance and Amal scrambles out and gets a reversal from Turtle. And then Bianca hits a beautiful rocking 50-50 sweep and Amal re-sweeps. So it's just like this awesome back and forth, like just really intense.
It's an active finals match. And yeah. Oh, it's 6 minutes long. So they have the gas tank to do it.
Yep.
Like that's what I like about these 6 minute matches. You have competitors that are willing to run for that 6 minutes because especially in the finals.
Yeah.
Like it's 6 minutes. Yeah. Like you train in the gym for the most part for 5 minute rounds. So it's like 6 minute rounds, especially it's like you can run the whole time. You can do the cool shit for the full time. And that match, again, this match with the active 50-50 sweeps back and forth shows that.
Yeah. It's super entertaining. 62 kilograms, Bia Mosquita defeats Fionn Davies by points. This is the closest 10-2 points match I've ever seen, which is going to sound ridiculous, but bear with me for a second because it's fucking great.
Bia takes this match over Fionn, which is, by the way, it's Fionn Davis, not Davies.
Oh, yeah.
I've been fucking up her name as per usual on the Grappling Rewind since we've been covering her. So Bia scores 10 points and Fionn scores 2, which is like, oh, it's a huge point differential.
It's really a much closer match than that point differential explain. Like, so Fionn starts off getting a near sweep. She gets an ad awarded for it from a seated guard with a sleeve grip. And, like, there's, like, this just sends Bia absolutely, like, apoplectic. Like, she goes completely ham.
Every time you score on Bia, she's like,
yeah, she ain't gonna have it.
Comes back hard.
Dude, so she goes to a furious passion.
Wait, did you use the word apoplectic?
Yeah.
That is beyond our audience, Emil.
Says Mr. Proprioception over here.
That's what that means. That's what that is.
But anyway, so Bia starts going for what I've been taught to call it a crazy dog pass. And Fionn actually turtles up. So
Hold on, you got to explain what I've been known to call a crazy dog power.
I didn't make that name. That's like what the Atos guys call it.
So describe it. Okay, like, so that's a weird name for a pass.
So it's a pass. I generally go for it if someone is in the gi. If someone is knee shielding and you can't really fucking get around it, you basically weave your arm and grab the bottom leg either by the knee material or the ankle material, and then you grab the collar with your other arm and you shove your head into their abdomen and tripod up and then try to kind of cut your knee out while you have those grips.
Crazy dog pass, of course.
Yeah, crazy dog pass. And one of the reactions in this case is exactly what Fionn does, which is to turtle up. And Bia gets an ad for that.
Well, Bia tries this pass a couple times, and I was like super impressed because Fionn is able to keep regarding.
Not just regard. She turtles, comes up, and then knocks Bia back to get the sweep. So now Fionn is up 2-0, and they both have ads. And the clock is down at 3:30, and Fionn is just – she does not let up. This was great because I was sitting here being like, oh, this is going to be a huge upset. And I was like, okay, Fionn, if she like wanted to, she could just hunker down and, you know, try to ride it out. but she does not at all. Like Bia goes for a scissor sweep, and Fionn reads it, pops up, comes around, like, is inches from getting a pass, too. Bia is able to re-guard, and Fionn is still, she's super active. So she's hopping from her knees to standing passing, back down to her knees to standing passing. And Bia's just, she's incredible. She's probably the most accomplished woman grappler out there right now. And she,
I mean, you're kind of from Okaku.
Yeah, she's just, she reads Fionn standing up perfectly.
I was really impressed with this read here, because Fionn just stands up, like,
in a split second.
And then
second.
A split second, Bia reads it, grabs, picks the both legs, like a dummy sweep or a double ankle sweep,
yep.
Is able to come up on it. It was just a bit of, but it's not just like a regular double ankle sweep. The timing on this is just beautiful from Bia.
Yeah.
Just butchered the names together.
So Bia comes up onto mount, gets to the back. So now she has sweep, mount points, back points. And is only there for like 10, 15 seconds.
Not very long at all.
Not very long. Fionn gets back out again. And so basically that one sweep counted for 10 points because Bia was sweeping from closed guard so that when she swept over, she was already into mount. And then already almost in like a technical mount where she was on the side. So it was very easy for her to get to the back. And so the 10 points seems like a lot, but it was this one like split second. You know,
make one mistake. That's what. That's why.
I mean, that's what being the best in the world.
I know,
that's
but
right.
That's why I love. Like, and that's this is matches like these are what makes me so hype and excited to cover stuff like this, because you watch like Fionn doing so well, doing everything perfectly, and she makes or not even makes a mistake, just does something that Bia is able to capitalize on, and Bia is able to get in a split second 10 points.
Yep.
And it's just like, and then everything's bad, and like, there's one little misstep. And one little positional change, and at the best in the world, scores all these points that quickly, and then matches back to where it was. And it's just, it's really amazing to watch people and grapplers be at that level and perform at that level and be able to do so much in such little time with such little given from your opponent.
But even with Bia Mosqueda on her back, Fionn's able to get out and get back to passing again. So she, I like, if this match happens again, I seriously don't know how it goes down.
Yeah,
so.
that one little transition doesn't happen. It's a much, much closer match.
So
onto the 70-kilogram. So BM takes the 62-kilogram division for the ladies. Onto the 70-kilogram division.
Tamara Silva submits Alessandra Moss by armbar. So this is Tamara shoots a triangle from guard, and Alessandra postures up, and basically Tamara is able to like haul herself up, like, and get an awesome arm grip, and then kicks her leg over for the armbar. At 90 kilograms, Gabriela Passagna submits Claire France Stevenon by triangle. Oh, my God. Gabriela is a monster. She's unbelievable. So Claire France goes for double underpass. Gabriela inverts and does the inversion where she basically folds herself in half.
She does the woman inversion.
And then she pops out to the side and inserts her leg for a triangle. And she gets a supremely tight triangle to begin with, starts attacking the armbar, and it's one of those things where it's like watching like an anaconda squeeze the life out of an animal, where it's like every adjustment that the animal makes, you can just see like just everything squeezing in and getting tighter and tighter. And so when she's attacking the arm, Claire France is defending it, and just getting the triangle just ultimately gets too tight, and she has to tap to that. So Gabrielle
really cool.
Is amazing.
Dude, really cool sequence too with the positional change to get the triangle. That's a really cool. We don't see that sequence to get the triangle a ton. You see it occasionally, but for the ladies, I like that they can just open the hips and just get the triangle from like that. More you see this particular triangle set up much more frequently in women's matches than men's matches because the hip angle is different, and it's really cool because I can't do it.
Absolutely.
So that does it for anything else you want to add for the UAEJJF?
Nah, it's a phenomenal event, yeah, as per usual.
Highly recommend. Go back. The matches are 6 minutes long. Go back and watch the finals matches. There's some really fun moments that are worth your time. So let's move on to the next one. So on to a recap of the 2019 European ADCC Trials. This is the second European Trials, the last one that took place in Lubon, Poland on April 27th. This is one of the last qualifiers we have for the ADCC this year. So I think we have the Asian qualifier, and then we have like one more round of invites, and then we will have the entire bracket or the entire lineup, pending injuries and pending replacements, for the ADCC 2019 event.
Yeah.
So we're getting close. So these are some of the last spots. Where do you want to start with this one?
We'll start, at the bottom.
This was amazingly difficult to cover.
Yes. Yeah, as per usual. But some really great, exciting stuff, too. At 65 kilograms, we have Thomas Halpin submitting Tuomas Kokkonen by rear naked choke.
I think we see Thomas a lot on Polaris. Like, he's a guy I think we've covered before. I recognize the last name. I recognize the name. I recognize the face. I just forget if it's Polaris or if it's something else. But I think he's a guy we've seen be really impressive before, and that, like, that makes sense considering he just won the ADCC European Trials.
This was such a surprising finish because it goes into overtime, and it's a really scrappy match, like both of them going back and forth. There's a lot of kind of like open guard for a little bit. So now it's into overtime. It's 2 minutes into overtime, so they've already been going for 10 minutes. And Thomas comes up for a single leg, gets a body lock for a takedown, and then takes the back and is able to sink in the rear naked choke. But it's dope to see someone in 10 minutes of like a grueling match be like, fuck it, I'm gonna get the takedown and secure the win that way.
It really highlights like how important ADCC is, and like winning that trial spot is a big fucking deal, and like you'll gut through and like get the finish. So
hell yeah,
props to Thomas getting the finish. That was the 66, dude. So all the weights are read for this. So usually for ADCC, I'm not sure if I'm incorrect, but I'm usually at 66 kilograms, 77 kilograms, 88 kilograms, under 99 kilograms, and over 99 kilograms. So for this event, all the weights are off like very slightly by 0.1 kilograms or something. So it reads really funny. So that was listed as 65 kilograms, but I assume it was 66 kilograms.
Right. So then the 77 kilogram bracket, we have Mateus Gamrot defeating Luca Pagarari by points 2-0. This was hilarious because already we're starting to see, you know, fucking people getting into that ADCC mindset and fucking ripping their shirts off.
ADCC will let you. So a couple things I like about ADCC with the rule set. One, they have shorter matches. They are really aggressive with how you have to like pull. If you pull guard, they have no points the first half of the match. They also, if you're like you're in the process of getting a submission or a takedown or something, they'll let it go off the mat. So, like, guys learn to not stop when they're fighting because they'll go off the mat and they'll keep going. What else? Oh, you can slam out of submissions as well. So, yeah. Like, ADCC has a really interesting rule set. They also have really screwy point scoring, which is very difficult to keep track of if you don't watch a lot of ADCC. So, read up on the rules to better understand exactly how guys are scoring the points that they're scoring.
Right. So there's a couple of blast doubles that Mateus hits. On the second blast double, he gets perfect penetration, gets to the hips, and lifts Luca up, like slams him to the mat, like straight
super,
out of WWE.
Super hard.
Yeah,
like it was big, like lifting and then like straight down double where
it was
like
pro wrestling style slam. It fucking.
Ooh. Dude, and the mats, the entire event, it's kind of like you're looking at a mat side footage here for this. The mats did not seem soft at all.
It
seemed like old school. Wasn't puzzle mats, but it didn't sound like it had any spring to it at all.
Yeah.
Go back and watch this. So finish your assessment.
It's an awesome slam. There's also another hilarious moment that you can go back and relive.
At the video, Lucas Paragoni versus Mateus Garmont, 2019, second ADCC European Trials. Go back and watch 7:50 in the video at 7:50 with 12 seconds remaining. Something really funny happens. There's a funny guard pull that you should go back and rewatch. Just go back and watch it. It was highly entertaining.
It made us laugh. We watched it a number of times.
Probably 15 times. Not gonna lie.
All right, 88 kilograms. Ben Dyson submits Milos Gadziak by Darce. So this is just basically a really nice Darce setup from front headlock. And he steps around over Milos's back to get to kind of like almost like a tech mount back with the Darce and gets the tap for the win. At 99 kilograms.
Hold up. Back in 77 kilograms, Emil's note literally says, he's like, has notes in like regular font, and then in all caps, the end of the note says, Lucas lifts Luca up and slams him pro wrestling style. Yeah, brother. Just wanted to highlight that this is the professional that I deal with every week. Literally in all
caps. I'm
not
wrong, man. I'm not wrong.
You're not wrong. I just wanted to let you guys know that these are Emil's notes.
99 kilograms,
yeah,
Mraz.
Brother.
Avdoyan submits Daniel Ladero by knee bar.
Another shirtless match.
Yeah.
This is really impressive.
Like, this was dope.
Yeah, this was a lot of fun. Mraz is like super active and moves very, very quickly for a dude of this size.
It's alarming. He's barrel shaped. he's a hairy barrel shaped man.
He reminds me a lot of like watching Muhammad Ali move, where he just like has that weird big guy speed.
This would be like someone more like, not exactly, you know, Big Country Nelson, but like kind of more in that body type than, you know, someone as
like a
as
young
a, like,
Big Country,
right?
Like young, the big country that grappled Frank Mir at grapplers,
right?
Like that Big Country,
right. So a barrel chested dude who moves very spryly, and so at one point he is they're in kind of like a dog fight position.
Moraz has him in a dog bar. If you know what a dog bar is,
even before that, but okay. what when he sets up the dog bar, it's from a dog fight position where, you know, they're both on their knees, and
one has the overhook, one has the underhook, and you're in like, you're trying to like,
and Moraz is
trying
like,
dog fight,
yeah, and his leg is stepped over the near leg of Daniel, and he, you know, what you can do from the dogfight position is you can do a sweep where you duck under, grab the far leg, and roll.
I know it is a crazy rule.
Yeah.
Which is this, I don't know what I learned. I know it's basically, because someone in the dogfight position typically...
It's a plan B.
Yeah.
It's a plan B rule.
Basically, in the dogfight position, both people are pushing into each other to try to like get down in position and knock the other person over. So you capitalize on your opponent pushing into you, and then if you basically duck underneath them and roll underneath them, the weight that they were pushing into you is now pushing over your center of gravity, and you can roll underneath them and flip them over.
Yeah, so a lot of people call it the plan B sweep, and basically the difference here is Moraz has Daniel's knee in between his legs, and he keeps it there, and so he comes, when he does the roll, he comes up in kind of like an over under position, but with Daniel's leg face up in between his legs, and he's able to fucking get this dog bar that Maine is talking about.
Yeah, well, he starts from the dog bar. It looks like, basically, if you ever looked at your dog or a dog pee on something, it lifts its leg up and pees. Because you're kind of straddling the leg in that position with one of your legs up, it's kind of referred to as a dog bar. And if with your foot that is over top of the leg, you lift at the opponent's ankle, you can kind of lift them up in a funny way.
You push your hips forward, and it just, if you're in the right position, and you know, it's a legit submission. It puts a ton of pressure on the fucking knee.
So he does that from the dog bar. He locks up the knee bar, rolls through, and is able to finish the knee bar on top with the sweep. Super impressive. You don't see it hit very frequently, especially not at high-level matches like this, so it was really exciting to see. I don't remember the last time I've seen this. I know I've seen it a bunch of times at Naga compilations and stuff like that, but
so,
you don't see it hit like this very frequently. It is a finish to go back and watch.
And
super exciting.
And Moraz is super excited himself, and he just fucking does like a popping backflip, which is, again, for his size, really fucking alarmingly fast.
Dude,
so.
This is under 9-9, right?
Yep.
Yeah, these are big dudes, and his whole team, like, mobs him, and it's really exciting. But so he's a dude I'm really excited to watch under 9-9 because he comes in, like, he has that athleticism. Dude, he's another guy that I'm not as familiar with, and I'm happy to see at this weight class.
Absolutely. So, plus 99 kilograms, Mateus Juskowiak defeats Heike Jasilia by points. That's
big props to Emil, by the way, on how difficult these names are, because I would have butchered both of those. There's like 14 J's in that, and like there's a double KK with an I in the name. So props to you, Emil. Happy to have your back, not butchering the names as bad as I do.
Absolutely. So yeah, it's just towards the end, Mateus hits a wonderful kind of double over butterfly sweep and then takes the back. So he wins by points that way. So in the women's brackets under 60 kilograms, we have Lilia Gluchowska submitting Peyton Letcher. That was by heel hook. And Lilia was savagely attacking the leg locks from the beginning. And Peyton, you know, was wonderfully defending, but she never... The problem is, if you have someone who's proficient with attacking the legs, you can't be only in the defense, because what's going to happen is...
They're going to get you.
They're going to get you. The moment you make a mistake, they're going to capitalize. That's exactly what happens. And Lilia hits an awesome heel hook, and Peyton is limping a little bit afterwards. So hopefully nothing too serious.
But it's a really good win. Again,
yep.
Lilia Gluchowska is a pretty perennial competitor. We cover her not infrequently on the show. Excited to see her in ADCC.
Yeah. Plus 60 kilograms. Stephanie Egger defeats Julia Stoliarenko by points. That's 15-0. So this was just utter domination. Stephanie gets to top side control. And basically the point differential is just she's just repeatedly passing Julia's
guard out of the guard, yeah. guard out of the guard. And that's like you pretty quickly rack up points, especially with these, you know, the plus 60 kilogram division for the ladies.
Yeah.
Once you kind of establish a passing sequence, you can see it run through a couple times. We've seen Cyborg do that with guys before. Like, he realizes he can start passing the guard, and he starts racking up a pretty steady point differential. That's kind of what happened here.
Yep.
So, again, overall, go watch the finals matches. I didn't get a chance to watch through a lot of the under, like, the lower matches, like the quarterfinals, semifinals. I know Freddie Vosgrove defeated Dan Strauss, which is a big win, so that was super impressive. I think Freddie made it into the third place match for ADCC, so that'll be super exciting to see him. I think he's on, like, announced on some other stuff. Always hilarious, always comes out in the singlet. I think he's probably due for black soon too, so, and more people that we typically cover on the UK events going to this trial, so that was cool. Anything else you want to add, Emil?
Nah.
Awesome, let's move on. On to a recap of Fight to Win 110 in Cleveland, Ohio. This event paid out a total of $28,793 in salvage commissions and was headlined by Michael Lira Jr. defeating Jaime Canuto via split decision, and that was Fight of the Night for the black belts.
This was almost perfect on the second take. Maine managed to fuck up both the Fight to Win number and the fucking city that it was in. So we had to do another take.
Not gonna lie, it's been a rough week. Like, my back is it's fucking killing me.
Yeah,
I'm getting cortisone shots in the back tomorrow. We'll talk about that at the end of the show. But
Maine's getting a backiotomy.
I'm getting a backiotomy. So by the way, Jaime Canuto, not Jamie Canuto, as I've called him forever.
Oh, interesting.
I'm probably gonna keep calling him the wrong name.
Yep.
I'm not gonna lie. So this event also featured Stipe Miocic on it.
Yeah, purple belt.
A purple belt that co-mained the event, and that was interesting, dude. Him in the gi.
Yeah.
Like, that was
cool, you know? It was interesting to watch him work in the gi, right? Like, you have a fucking prolifically dominant heavyweight UFC champ, and just to see him.
Let's start with that match. Let's just start there.
Sure.
It was really interesting, like you said. Like, you saw that it was pretty evident that Stipe is his first competition ever in the gi.
Yeah.
Which is crazy, but that you're co-main eventing a fight to win.
But he didn't look a lot. You know, he looked like a fucking purple belt. You know?
Oh, yeah, no, he looked like a purple belt. Like, he looked like a good purple belt that had a really good no-gi game, but was having some problems addressing Aaron Howard's grips.
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, like, Stipe is able to get the takedown, and then, like, dude, he fucking gets passed. Like, he gets numerous passes on Aaron Howard, and who they kept repeatedly saying was a police officer. And
it kind of hammered the firefighter versus police officer narrative
angle
home a little bit.
Yeah, I know.
Dude, Stipe did an interview with a local outlet out in Cleveland. And they were talking about, like, the charity thing he was doing it for, and, like, they repeatedly were like, "Yeah, Aaron had to play." They kind of played up the matchup between the two, and it was interesting.
Yeah. So, Stipe is able to get passed a number of times, but, like, yeah, he even afterwards admitted that he didn't really know the rule set. So he, you know, in his mind, was dominating the match very well. Aaron was...
Well, he was looking at, like, a point, but Fight to Win's not points, and it's subs.
Aaron was holding on to this really weird lapel grip, even though he was getting passed. And there was... I had to literally go through and watch this, like, a couple times to see, like, okay, how did... You know, where was the sub attempt? There is a moment where Aaron feeds the lapel behind Stipe's head and grabs the lapel. Sometimes you'll see... baseball bat grips from this lapel grip.
Yeah, baseball grip, but samurai grip.
Yeah, samurai grip. Then he gets a cross-collar attempt, and I'm assuming that's the deciding factor because...
Honestly, that's what I thought.
Yeah.
Because, like, I don't think Stipe threw up any, like, demonstrable
any
offense, and so I saw Aaron threw up the one, you know, piece of submission offense in the match, and, like, that gets the win if I had to win.
Yep.
Even though if you're getting...
pass as many times as you want.
Yeah, they want submission attempts, and Aaron throws up the submission attempts. So it was interesting. It was cool for me, at least, to see... I like seeing, like, huge Hallmark guys compete in the gi.
Yeah, it's cool.
And it was cool.
I love Stipe too. He's such a friendly dude.
Such a good guy too.
Yeah.
So that was a lot of fun.
Cool.
Let's move on to the topic. So let's move on to the main event, which was Michael Lira Jr. defeating Jaime Canuto, and that was Fight of the Night for the black belts.
Yeah, it was a deservedly Fight of the Night. It was a great scrap. You know, it goes back and forth. At one point, Jaime's on top with a and gets on top after a De La Riva sweep, goes to straight... Oh, by the way, he goes to that straight ankle grip that we saw, like, a couple weeks ago, where it's a straight ankle grip, but, like, you're on your knees, and the other person's kind of, like, belly down.
So I was like, look at that!
Yeah, we saw that, so I I was like, oh yeah, I wonder if we're gonna start to see like finishes from there more frequently, although this doesn't get finished here. So there's furious guard work and passing on both ends. Michael hits an amazing inverted sweep at one point, but basically it goes back and forth until the very end, and they just start trading toe holds, and then like finally they both land in a double toe hold, and there's like 45 seconds of this where they're just sitting there cranking on each other's fucking feet, and I'm just cringing the whole fucking time.
Dude, double toe holds are always like, double toe holds go one of three ways. A guy gets his foot fucked up.
Yeah.
Both guys get a little tweaked.
Yeah.
Or like they're not close at all, but at any second, like somebody can just turn the foot and just break the guy's foot, and option one happens. So this was really interesting because it was 45 seconds of this match. You're like, this could go either way.
It's a really 45 seconds is a really long time when there's like near submissions on the fucking.
Oh, and you're two of the top black belts in the world in the sport that we cover. Like that dude at any point in time can change the angle and put the toes in the butt and just rip your foot off. So the camera was like looking at both. I was like, man, both these toe holds don't look super close, but they all look
far either.
But they're all on that weird middle range where it's like at any point in time someone makes an angle or changes the hip or changes the leg a little bit and the toes just get slammed in the foot and it happens.
I guarantee if either of those were me, my foot would have erupted. So
it would have exploded into a million foot pieces.
Absolutely.
So it, again, the last 45 seconds was super like high intensity. It was like, oh, who's gonna get it? No one's able to get it, but it was still like super impressive.
Yeah.
Michael Lira takes that via decision.
So then we have Max Jimenez defeating Alex Huddleston by decision. John Lawrence defeats Brad Bukovics by decision. Pablo Castro defeats Mark Vives by decision. Darren Branch defeats Tom Scala by split decision. Robert Maloff defeats Tom Kolzowski by decision. Zach Manzlani defeats Rob Heilman by head and arm choke.
And that was submission of the night for the black belt.
Hell yeah, Zach. Yeah, this was fucking amazing. Zach had his full, like his amazing diversity of skill set on display here. He went from, you know, getting kind of like headlock grips to attacking the feet and back again, and then going into dominant like pressure passing, and then sitting back into to attack legs again. Like
he's very versatile. Yeah, I like you watch guys go like between the top end and the back end, the top end, and not just like only going for the feet or only going for the top end. Like he goes back and forth between positions, and it's really entertaining to watch from like a spectator view, and I like that. And then the finishing sequence here, he gets like almost something from the half guard. He kind of locks up like a really tight head and arm, and I was like, ooh, he might actually like be in danger of finishing this. And he kind of like drops low, he gets the head and arm, and you look like, oh man, Rob's gonna really have to deal with this. And then you kind of watch Rob's like hands like fall over. I was like, is he asleep from this position?
He was so asleep.
And then the ref kind of looks like, is he asleep from this position? And then the ref calls it, and Zach stands up, and you see Rob is like very
out
asleep.
Cold.
But dude, really, like, it was cool to see how tight Zach was able to make this that quickly.
Yeah.
Like, really impressive positional control. And I went back and rewatched the positioning of Zach's head here. When Zach locks it up, he immediately drops his head to the mat, but he doesn't do the thing where he drops his head and then he slides his head up into the shoulder. He just, like, drops it into the correct place, and you can see he's immediately pressuring with the side of his head into the arm.
Yep.
And it was a really interesting, like, lack of adjustment here that I think is what led to Rob kind of going out so quickly. And so really interesting finishing on, like, kind of lack of adjustment on the head and arm, which is, I think, why it finished so quickly. And then Rob was very, very asleep. Zach gets up and deservedly smashes the knife for the black belt. It's like exciting finish.
Yeah, absolutely. Outstanding work, Zach. Then we have Louis Armazani defeating George Euler by decision. We have Chris Krebel defeating Douglas Kubis by decision.
On to the brown belt results.
Pedro,
I don't know why I read that in a weird fucking voice.
Pedro Zabata Jr. defeats Chris Robertson.
And he becomes the adult brown belt super heavyweight gi champion.
Emil Fischer defeats Pat Paul by heel hook.
Matt Paul. Dude, Emil Fischer's walkout was something to watch, man. That dude came out with like an entourage of dudes in like unicorn and shark outfits.
Like glow lights.
And he came out with like guys wearing like the inner tubes. And he came out to the Rick and Morty Terry Fold song, which I played for Emil before this recording.
And now I'm not going to be able to sleep at night.
And Emil got through like a minute of it and he went, I'm done with this.
Yeah.
Well, are you not a Rick and Morty fan?
I like Rick and Morty, yeah.
The song was strange. It was man, Emil Fischer's walkout was, it was a thing. It was something.
It was great. Matt Paul is, doing really aggressive pressure passing, and Emil is, doing a great job at kind of like re-guarding and inverting. And at one point he just is able to, sort of invert a little bit, from the side and get to outside Ashigarami and gets a beautiful outside heel hook finish.
Yep, so he becomes the Masters Brown Belt light heavyweight no-gi champion for Fight to Win.
Next up we have Dan Dykeman defeating Chris Collins by heel hook.
And that was submission of the night for the Brown Belts. Dude, Dan Dykeman, 2 weeks in a row, back-to-back cards, on the Baltimore card last weekend, on this card this weekend, competing, yeah, winning both times.
He walked out to the Dawson's Creek song with like a giant, like projected James Vanderbeek crying like photo in the background is fucking hilarious. So he gets a scissor takedown. Dan alternates heel hooks and straight ankle locks, and in a really adept way, and he's able to lock in a heel hook while Chris is struggling to, keep up and defend.
I really enjoyed this like finishing sequence for some reason. Like, you watch Dan just like jump into the scissor takedown. Like, I like the Fight to Win allows a scissor takedown in no-gi. He just jumps into it, and then you don't immediately see the heel hook. Usually with a lot of guys that throw the scissor takedown, they go it, and then it immediately goes into the heel hook, and that's all she wrote. But with this one, you see Dan get the scissor takedown, he tries for it, gets it, and then you see a lot of, like, footwork and readjustment before he's able to actually get to the heel hook. And it was really interesting, because usually you see it, they jump, and it kind of goes to the heel hook, and that's it. So it was cool to see him be able to actually adjust here and work in the position after getting the takedown to get the heel hook. And again, it's submission of the night, deservedly so, because of you saw all these little adjustments that it took to get to the heel hook.
Absolutely. Then we have Gabriella McAuliffe defeating Abby Passanelli by decision. Ben Sina defeats Troy the Night Pigeon Everett by choke from the back.
Dude, there's no way that Troy's beard did not get, like, hella crunched in this. Because it looked like the grip that Ben had here, like, really good match from Ben, really good match from Troy. Looked like the grip he had was like half beard, half lapel.
Yeah,
and he gets there and he turns and you're watching like, oh man, there's no way. There's not just like a handful of beard in there as well. And Troy takes it, deals with it, tries to get out. But Ben's able to just make the angle and just get the choke from the back. Again, really nice finish as well.
Yeah. Wyatt Ratson defeats Michael Baker by rear naked choke.
On to the purple belt results. You read that as an interrogative. That was weird.
I'm sorry. So we already talked about Aaron Howard defeating Stipe Miocic by decision. Sean McMichael defeats Andrew Pardee by toehold. Michael Haskett defeats James Stafford by armbar. Darla Sedlick defeats Catherine Farrell by decision. Gary Hensley defeats Andriy Boichko,
By Splatel, and that was submission of the night for the purple belts.
Thank you.
You stopped reading halfway through, Emil. It threw me the fuck off.
I didn't know what the fuck Splatel was.
You know what Splatel is?
No, I have no idea what a Splatel is.
A Splatel? Really?
No.
All right, a Splatel is that weird wrestling thing where you are, it's the groin splitter.
Yeah, okay, so it's an electric chair.
No. Okay. It's completely different. All right, okay. We're going to pause the recording for a second. All right, Emil now knows what a Splatel is.
Yeah, and I'm thoroughly disgusted. That looks really uncomfortable.
It's terrible.
I don't ever want that done to me. Holy shit.
Have you never been Splatel before?
Nope.
You got to do more wrestling classes, Emil.
Evidently.
That shit's on you.
No, I'm glad.
So a Splatel, look up, it's spelled Spladle. It's a wrestling move that basically, it kind of like groin stretches and folds the person in half while putting them in basically a pinning position. I don't really know how to describe this position.
Yeah, you just fold them in half. It looks like it sucks.
It's terrible. Yep. And in jiu-jitsu, it's a submission. So he gets it. Super impressive. Again, deservedly submission line for the purple belts.
Ken Robinson defeats Sonny Dubetz by toehold. Sarah Stump defeats Chelsea Henry by bow and arrow. Anthony Santiago defeats Adam Sandy by decision. Paul Lynn defeats Michael Kaczmarek by armbar. John Plazak defeats Tyler Story. John Plazak defeats Tyler Story by triangle armbar. Cody Stevens defeats Ismaili Safi by decision. Ryan Ariella defeats Jeff Bukovic by decision. Devin Kelleher defeats Josh Lasik by decision. Davy Cabral defeats Jacob Props by decision.
And that was Fight of the Night for the Purple Belts.
Justin Michael defeats Paul Okeo by leg lock. Josh Roller defeats Sean Foster by decision.
On to the blue belt results.
Josh Lorton defeats Sean Rawl by heel hook. Corey Taxic defeats Mike Berta by triangle. Nick Impton defeats Daniel Rogers by heel hook. Nick Ricky defeats Nick Huffman by front choke.
And that was submission of the night for the blue belts.
Eric Lee Hernandez Cassiano defeats David McLean by decision. Chris Lozano defeats Zach Coker by rear naked choke. Michael Hudak defeats Dennis Sensnoski by decision.
And that was fight of the night for the blue belts. On to the teens and kids results.
Liam Clark defeats Gavin Terry by guillotine.
And that was submission of the night for the kids and teens.
Alex Serban defeats Dominic Wodzarski by triangle. Carter Hinman defeats Travis Torres by rear naked choke. And Pito Castro defeats Scott Tyler by D'Arce.
And that does it for Fight to Win 110 in Cleveland, Ohio. I finally got it right that time. So, what's up? We are going to talk about 2019 Beat the Streets Grapple at the Garden. I got Rob Sullivan here, who actually understands wrestling, unlike me. So, we're going to have him talk about, and there's a big matchup on this card, that we're going to talk about, which is Ben Askren versus, I completely lost my place, Jordan Burroughs. There we go. And so, because I don't know a ton about Jordan Burroughs, I know that he's very accomplished. I don't know a ton about Askren from a wrestling credential perspective. I've seen him kind of more in MMA. We're going to talk about that because I think it's an interesting matchup to talk about, and it's in the news. So, what's up, Rob?
How's it going? So, Jordan Burroughs, Ben Askren. This could actually be a really short podcast, and I could just say...
Well, this is going to be a segment in the larger episode this week.
Yeah, I understand.
I'm going to put it in some random place within the episode.
This segment could be 3 seconds long, because at the end of the day, the quick answer is, or the quick breakdown is Jordan Burroughs should run directly over Askren.
They're just different level. They're just different level grapplers. Like Askren,
different levels. Not really the right way to put it. It is in one sense. It's a different level in freestyle. Askren was internationally 1-1 on like the grand stage at freestyle. His style, the style that Askren kind of perfected, or I don't want to say invented, but he
it's named after him now.
Yeah,
funk wrestling,
and. I mean, he invented it to an extent. It's more or less like the looseness in wrestling, not having the same structure. And
it's not Penn State.
Yeah, actually, Penn is a pretty funky team too, especially nowadays. Ben was just doing stuff other people weren't doing yet, and he was doing stuff that he always broke the rules of. Don't do this. You don't reach back. You don't roll over your back. You don't do these things. And Ben got away with him. And he has a body type that makes it very easy for him to do it because he has such a strange body type. But on the Burroughs side of things, you have a super athlete who, you know, both of those guys were standouts in college. Ben was overall better college wrestler.
Well,
better
Ben is like, kind of known as one of the best American collegiate wrestlers ever. Just look at his number of pins alone. Like that dude,
his fall, I mean, was he third fall record, something like that?
Something ridiculous.
Third
like
most
that.
In NCAA history. He, third. That's at the college level, that's crazy because it isn't like touch falls. Like even in freestyle and Greco, you have touch falls where things just happen really quickly. Like college, lots of guys, the best guys don't get pinned unless they get caught. It rarely ever happens. So
the fact that Askren is pinning many guys in the collegiate
at the highest
circuit.
Level and staying undefeated as long as he did with such like a small loss record on his side, it's kind of crazy. I mean,
that being said, though, this is not
folk style.
Yeah, this is
a free. This is freestyle rules. I think it's Beat the Streets used to be modified freestyle rules, which I can't remember the difference what that even means. But it just really meant it was a little more easier to understand for the commoner who would only know folk style. I don't
What's
know
up?
Any
That's
other way
me.
To put that. But most people don't understand either. So rules-wise, I'm going to act like I would understand if I was watching it or could tell the difference. But the match is set in freestyle rules. It benefits Burroughs all day. Ben's game just is not going to translate very well. Him being older, a lot more war-torn, I have a feeling his speed isn't going to be there. And Burroughs, you're talking about a guy that, despite having like 16 pins in his leg, is still fast as hell and seems to have come back rejuvenated after really kind of taking an ass-beating last year and not you know, being the Burroughs of old.
Burroughs is still competing in wrestling, which I think is the most interesting kind of piece here. Ben transitioned to MMA 10 years ago and hasn't really done a whole lot of wrestling since then. And then Burroughs is still a dude that, like, I mean, dude, he won the Pan American Games this year. He's a world, he's a multiple-time world champion from 2011 up to 2017, with only 2014 him getting bronze that year. Like, he's a monster. And so I think it's a really interesting matchup for people like myself that don't watch wrestling. I kind of looked into it and asked you, actually. I saw the matchup announced, and I went, hey, Rob, how's this going to look? And you were pretty blunt, like, unless Askren pulls off some crazy shit, Burroughs should probably come through him.
The big thing is Askren's ride game, and Askren on bottom was always his bread and butter. The other problem is when Askren would get in on a shot, he could hang out on it forever and kind of, like, just get to what he wants. You don't have that same game doesn't work in freestyle. So you can constantly be kind of popped to your hip and expose your back, and now you're getting scored on. Not to mention the fact, I don't even think he can get the Burroughs legs. I think Burroughs is going to go through him. And
Burroughs pins him?
I see him tech fall on him. I think
so. In wrestling, if you're not familiar with wrestling, a tech fall in wrestling is you score, how many points is it?
15 more than your opponent.
15 and more. If you go up for 15 points in your opponent, the match basically ends with a technical fall. Basically a technical pin, sort of.
I got to remember if that's the same in freestyle. It might be different. But it doesn't matter. It's a lot of freaking points. I could see that happening. And the difference in freestyle, it happens real fast. Because if somebody gets a leg lace, meaning exactly what that sounds like, they interlace your legs and roll you, or a gut wrench and they roll you. Every time you're back exposed, that's more points. So if they keep piling that up, you know, that match will be over real fast. And that's why you see first round tech falls in freestyle quite often.
So there's some other interesting, anything else you want to talk about this matchup? Or, like, other than, like, it's really kind of Burroughs to lose here. Like, he should.
Yeah, it's Burroughs to lose because he would have to get caught. And Askren now, if there was a guy that can catch you when you do something dumb, it's absolutely Ben Askren. I'm pretty sure, click on that, it was a 6 years difference.
What do you mean? Askren's 34, Burroughs is
30. So it's only four. Yeah. For whatever reason, I thought Askren was closer to my age, but 2 years. 2 years his senior, but he...
Yeah, Rob, you an old 36, though, man.
I am a very old 36.
You got some pro fights on your
almost
face.
Almost 36.
You got some pro fights on your face that and your ginger, so that didn't help. Yeah. That didn't help at all.
But I just can't see. I can't see Jordan, especially with Burroughs being at the highest level he is and being
and
consistent.
He's still there.
He's
still
complete,
at the highest
competing.
Level, like competing.
I mean, right now they just had the U.S. Open. The guys are just lining up waiting to get to Burroughs. He didn't have to do anything. So he's still in the room every day working. Now, granted, so is Ben, but it's more from an instructional coaching perspective, but he's still wrestling like every day. Is it enough? No, probably not. It's not the same. He doesn't have the same, iron sharpens iron. He doesn't have the same army around him that Burroughs does to make him, ready and prepared for any type of matchup. And then
the big thing that's really interesting between the wrestling and between the two, but you see wrestlers, like, it's so important to have a really strong camp of high level guys, like, constantly. Jiu-jitsu, you get certain outlier guys that can kind of do it without that camp, but in wrestling, like, the best guys are with the best guys constantly. That's kind of how the sport is.
Yes and no. It actually can be kind of similar in some respects. It really comes down to, do you have the one training partner or one coach who's willing to give you a lot of time? Because at the end of the day, MMA, BJJ, wrestling, it's an individual sport. And if you have one or two guys around you that are just willing to grind it out, and they know what they're doing. Obviously, you got a bunch of green guys and then one awesome one, it's not going to work. But if you've got somebody that's over your shoulder, like, really just, constantly keeping on you, they're just a shadow. And it's like, okay, you need to fix this. Okay, we fix this. Okay, this is where you're great at. We're going to make this sharper and blah, 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 blah. It adds up. I mean, even if you look at MMA, Demetrius Johnson, who the hell is around him aside from his coaches?
Right, like, that's a good point.
You get those standouts.
But it's rare. But it's much more rare.
Case in point, that goes with what you were saying. Like, one of my favorite college wrestlers of the last, 5-6 years was Isaiah Martinez, Imar. That dude was the standout at Illinois. He was really the only guy. He had decent training partners. He had a great coach. I mean, he was a four-time All-American. What was it? Four-time All-American, two-time champion. Lost those other two matches his junior and senior year to Valencio from Penn State. And Penn State, every year people would count Joseph out, being like, oh, he's not really that great. And by the end of the season, even when Imar had beat him at Big Ten, he comes back and rallies in the finals because the guys around him can just keep making him better. And Imar, it depends on, how he shows up, if he makes a little mistake, and, that's how it works. But it can work. You can have a small group, and you can be amazing. It just comes down to how fucking hard you want to work. And I think, Askren can bring in the right guys, but can you bring in a guy that you can emulate to be Jordan Burroughs? And at the same time, this is, to both of these guys, this is an exhibition, and at the end of the day, it's kind of fun. Ben probably just wants to see where he stands, see where it is. He's probably training hard, but I'm sure his focus now being in the UFC isn't only this match. It's
right.
going to be
He's
very
got, like, bigger, like UFC. Like
he had to be approved
paid.
To do this. Like they had to say okay.
No, not usually.
Yeah,
usually for in the UFC for guys doing grappling exhibition matches, there's no approval process. They can do that in their contracts.
It's in their contracts.
It's usually available. They're allowed
to do
that.
He said that they okayed it.
You can't do usually at the top 10. I think you might have to ask. But
I think he had to at least
for
ask.
Anything striking, you have to get okay, and they don't allow that. But usually grappling exhibition stuff, wrestling, jiu-jitsu, that you just kind of I don't know any judo. I've never seen anyone do judo, but judo fights, judo super fights are newest fight to win, so usually their UFC is fine with you competing in stuff that's not striking sports.
That's cool. So he said something to the effect of like he
got it
going
approved.
To do this. Yeah.
So is there any other matchups on this card you want to talk about? We were talking a little bit through the rest of the card. Again, I'm not hugely familiar with many of these guys. I recognize Kyle Snyder.
Yeah, I mean Snyder, that's in the bag.
This is a really interesting like card in general, because you were talking about earlier that basically this entire card for Beat the Streets, Grapple at the Garden, which by the way is on Flow Wrestling if you want to look at it. Tune over there. If you have Flow Grappling, you also have everything else in Flow.
I thought it was Flow Softball, Flow Water Sports.
Flow Bowling.
There's a Flow Horse one I've stumbled across.
Flow Track. You have everything. Yeah. So you have Flow Wrestling if you're interested in watching it. It happens on May 6th. There's this whole card is basically Olympians versus standout collegiate guys.
Well, they tried to get it to be the champion versus champion type thing, or at least like a member of the U.S. team. And some of these matches are. I mean, Anthony Oshnot was the champion. Yanni, however you say his Greek last name, was a champion.
Dakwa Kahalas.
Yeah. There's a couple of them. Nick Serrano, champion. Nate Tomasello, NATO. He's a beast. He was Ohio champion. He's on the world team.
Any other matchups here that are really like
interesting? There's a lot of interesting matches. The thing is, like, on average, the guys that are college are stepping into deep, deep water here. Now, granted, Yanni just decked a team member, former champion, and then Zane Rutherford, who was, arguably one of the best of the last couple decades from Penn State at U.S. Open. So that matchup is crazy. But I think like he probably does just beat Punya from Indonesia. Serrano has his hands full with Joe Colon. There's good matches on here, and if you're not familiar with freestyle wrestling, this is definitely a good card to watch, because you're going to see some wild stuff. Some of these matches are going to be utter blowouts, And honestly, the Burroughs Askren could be one of them. David Taylor, Drew Foster should actually be a pretty good match. I would say it's Taylor, but there's still going to be some good matches here. Gwizdowski, however you say his last name, that should be a good one up there at heavyweight.
So it looks like a fun card, honestly.
It's a fun card, and Beat the Streets is awesome. Beat the Streets, there's one here in Baltimore, there's one in a lot of different cities, but the idea behind Beat the Streets is bringing is trying to introduce wrestling as like a something to kind of help out the urban culture, if you will, in major cities. Like I said, Baltimore has one. I know New York is where it all started, so they every year they have the Grapple at the Garden. I actually have friends' sons who've wrestled on it, and it's a really cool experience. You're like, they have it. This one's Grapple at the Garden. I'm about 90% sure this is inside Madison Square Garden because they've had it before where it's on the street in front of Madison Square Garden in Times Square, and it's, you know, it's this huge event. And for wrestling to get showcased on that level is huge, especially for a sport that they tried to take out of the Olympics recently, as, you know, that of like 5 years ago. And to have something like that every year is, it's such a big deal. And it's also for like Jordan Burroughs and Ben Askren, you're talking about two huge names in wrestling. You're talking about arguably greatest ever in Burroughs, and Askren probably brings so many more eyes just being Ben Askren.
That's
with
we're talking
UFC
about
and everything else, Bellator one, everything he's done, and then his collegiate career. So it makes it really interesting. I mean, I think a lot of people, if they're unknown, they are gonna get to see a guy get possibly butchered. But I love Ben Askren; he's one of my favorite wrestlers to watch. So I'm definitely excited about it because Burroughs is also one of my favorite wrestlers to watch. So at the end of the day, you don't really lose here. And yeah, that's pretty much it for that card. It's going to be a good one.
All right. Well, thanks a lot, Rob. Really appreciate your insight here because I don't know wrestling very well at all, and I only recognize names. So it was cool to hear, have you come on. Appreciate it. And we're going to try to get you on in the future for more wrestling-related stuff when, like, big wrestling stuff comes up.
Cool. All right. Thanks for having me.
So on to our preview of Fight to Win 111 in Chicago, Illinois. This event is main evented by black belt heavyweight gi title Herber Santos versus Gutenberg Padetta.
That's fucking, yeah, that's world-class talent right there. No fucking doubt about
it. That's some insane shit, dude. Yeah. Gutenberg, I think, has been the champion for Fight to Win at heavyweight for a little bit now. I think I saw him take the title at not this last Baltimore card, but the card before that,
yep,
versus Tim Spriggs, and he's defended it once or twice since then.
Yeah.
Herber Santos is a monster. Yep. Again, had kind of a funny performance this last weekend at UAE JGF, but still like had flashes of that Herber we've seen. Again, he's a dude that's super hot and cold, so it'll be interesting to see which Herbert shows up. So it'll be interesting. Again, he's a dude that can really contend for that title, though. So that should be a lot of fun. On to the co-main event, we have a black belt female bantamweight title, Catherine Perret versus Luisa Montero. This should be a fucking great match.
It's going to be fucking awesome. It's going to be absolute fire. Then, dude, third match in, 195-pound black belt gi match, Gustavo Batista versus Mateus Denis. That's going to be fucking amazing.
Dude, you love watching Mateus.
Dude, 195 black belt gi match. After that, Matt Layton versus Devontae Johnson.
Dude.
Like, this is fucking stacked.
Yeah,
I think fucking
these guys
are going to be amazing.
Either went against each other or were supposed to go against each other at Subspectrum. I forget if the match happened or not. I want to say that Devontae pulled out for Spider and then was replaced by Tex Johnson. And we saw Tex Johnson fight Matt Layton last time. We've seen Matt Layton do fucking work on Fight to Win in the past. So this is a really exciting matchup. Dude, this should be amazing.
Should be great.
160-pound black belt gi match.
Jeff Curran and Steve Kinnison.
We have 110-pound black belt no gi bout.
That's 210 black belt. Goran Reljic versus John Gooda.
195-pound black belt gi match.
Asher Darmo versus Ezra Lennon.
260-pound black belt gi match.
Jamil Fuckery versus Jeff Russell.
We have 195-pound black belt gi match.
Mike Sim versus Michael Hagel.
185-pound black belt nogi belt.
Josh Pacini versus Daniel Wanderlei.
180-pound black belt gi match.
Blake Klassman versus Steven Patterson.
180-pound black belt gi match.
Tick Oates versus Calum Kellista.
TK Oates.
TK Oates.
175-pound black belt gi match.
Brandon Batchelor versus Bob Hamrick.
We have a 175-pound black belt gi match.
Jeff Serafin versus Dom Hoskins.
That should be a fun-ass match. 160-pound black belt gi match.
Justin Falk versus Aaron Brooks.
155-pound black belt
Leonardo
gi match.
Leonardo Araujo versus Caio Cesar Oliveira.
145-pound black belt gi match.
Joseph Aleva versus Kelly Johnson.
We have a 130-pound black belt gi match. I lost my place.
Perez Figueroa versus Jimmy Santiago.
We have a Masters brown belt welterweight title.
Daniel Villanueva versus Dan Humpke.
And let's see, we have, oh, yes, shit, 195-pound brown belt gi match, Nick the Spaceman Spacek versus Aaron Rodriguez. Dude, there's a bunch of, like, guys I know in this card. We have
Matt Layton's on there? Or Mike Layton's.
Mike Layton, that's Matt Layton's brother. 180-pound brown belt gi match, Mike Layton versus Jeremy Hastings. This is a great card. It's really funny, so because I listen to the Grappler Union podcast, it's a podcast out of Chicago. Really like them. They do put on a great show. They do interviews for, like, international guys and also local guys, so they've talked to a bunch of, like, local Chicago guys, and I recognize so many names on this card because there are guys that I've heard on their show. So highly recommend their show and this event. Fight to Win for a while now has said that Chicago is the best, if not one of their, like, top two or three or best crowds, like, in the country. So go to this event if you can. Definitely it's one to watch. It's like half the card is black belts. It's a giant black belt card. Definitely worth your time, but yeah, looks awesome.
Yeah.
All right, so it's good to have you back, Emil, off your 1 week of vacation from, oh, I just got to enjoy, actually, no, not week. Your previous week was like, oh, I just got to enjoy grappling, didn't have to cover it.
Yeah, yeah, it's good to be back. Damn, dude, I hope that fucking cortisone heals you up, man.
Dude, I'm so excited. So tomorrow in the morning, I'm getting like one or two cortisone shots in my back. Hopefully it's basically fixes the nerve, or it really, hopefully it reduces the inflammation of the disc, which then stops putting pressure on the nerve, which stops making me be so in so much pain, which would be dope. I spent most of the weekend just kind of laying and not doing a whole lot. So it'd be awesome to, like, not even like train again, just like drive in a car and like be comfortable again. That would be dope.
Yeah.
So I'm like, that, you know, it's bad, but I'm not thinking about like training. I'm not thinking about competing. I'm just like, I just want to like not be in pain doing the podcast.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Hopefully it goes well.
Yeah. So I'm hoping, but again, I'm excited. Yeah. So there's that. Anything else going on? Like, you do anything? You still training? Your hand's still fucked up?
No, my hand's good. So I'm just being lazy. I need to get back on the mats. So
nice. So I think that does it for this week on the show. As always, I'm Maine here with your co-host,
Emil,
and we will see you on the mats. If you like the show, please consider sharing it on Facebook with the folks at your gym. It's the best way that we grow the show, and we really appreciate it. You can reach out to us on email.
We also have Instagram. We have Facebook. We have Twitter. We have Google Plus.
Until that shuts down.
We have a website.
If you have an event you would like to have us cover, please let us know. If you have a name, like most people do, and you'd like to have us stop butchering it,
let us know.
Reach out to us. The show is also available on YouTube, Spotify, in addition to iTunes and every other podcast service. We very much appreciate your time, and thank you.